not quite sure where you start these sort of things, but arbitrarily we started with Vince, who represents the Western world, particularly Western technology, but Western culture. And Vince, you know, we use the analogy of Vince starting to build a little apparatus for his a woman he loves, Mona. And it's a two-person thing, but people like it, and people watch this happening and want to get on board, and everyone likes the way it's going. It gets bigger and bigger. This is where cartoons can do stuff, you know, quite quickly. So we hope we establish that what he's building is actually the whole planet. And it's got a top deck and a lower deck, and the top deck is the Western world, and the lower deck is not quite finished. So the rest of the world has to kind of improvise. Yeah. So that's the basic metaphor. And then, but I suppose the other issue that triggered the whole film is, the September 11 thing. That appalling thing in New York. The other is a book called by George Monbiot, Age of Consent, where he said the East-West tension and disarray is got a lot to do with some of the institutions which we've built. And so we go on to that. We say in the film, through this metaphor, that our colonialism, we know, left a huge trail of border and chaos, which they're still trying to work out now. But when we went independence, we show independence, we show the lower deck having to go at the upper deck, the independence with their flags and banners. And then we left the third world and gave them independence. I'm talking about us as the West. But we left behind all this apparatus, this financial, economic apparatus, which is still very much loaded against the third world. And this is George Monbiot's story. Then you read Arundhati Roy, and she does another version of that from her, you know, personal experience with the effects of World Bank and IMF on huge bits of the destruction that have happened over villages and whole states in India, and she's brilliantly lucid and passionate about that. So that fitted as well. And we talked to these students in Cairo and in Lebanon, university students, and they know, you know, they're 19 years old, and they will talk about the Security Council, how that's loaded against them, the IMF. So you suddenly realise, or you know, we explain the film, which most people know anyway, is that these people live a different history. They get a different history and they live a different history, and we've got something to do with their history.
Yeah, sure.
So that's what the film tries to do, and it's hugely ambitious and absurd in a way, but it's just territory we thought animation could help, cartoons, satire could help, and so that's how we got to where we are.
We'll come back and talk about the specific role of the animation and satire in a moment, I guess, but the next sort of layer after that central analogy of Vince and his freedom machine that he builds is a panel of experts that you've assembled. Some of them are real figures, some are fictional, some are animated, some are live action. Can you talk about the function that they play in the film?
I think that's quite interesting art, and it's another way of saying it's not me saying these things, it's someone else, you know, the old trick. But we thought we invented this imaginary committee who, with Robin Nevin as the chairman and Barry Otto is the secretary, and they're the only people who speak. The rest are a few mates to fill it out. And the other people, we did this against blue screen, and so I drew people from various nations, you know, there's a Russian and there's an Indian and an Irish guy, I don't know, who comment a bit, but they, to me, represent a committee that is given the job of unravelling this story. So I thought, well, that's kind of CSI, you know, we see this all the time, a little team that's got to unravel this puzzle. And I thought that might be a kind of narrative hook that people can take on board so that they're not completely lost in this film. This little committee is supposed to be us trying to work it out. Whether that works, some people, like a lot of people at the start, one of our funding bodies suggested take them out, they don't do anything. But I think they've got to be there in a way.
You also assemble a reasonably formidable array of talking head interviews with the likes of Arundhati Roy and Noam Chomsky, Robert Fisk.
Yes.
Who I guess supply the factual element, dimension to the film, rather than the as opposed to the analogy, they provide the straight sort of fact.
Yeah.
Why did you feel it was important to include that element rather than trying to let the analogy speak for itself?
Yeah. Well, see, analogy, we use analogies in ordinary, you know, newspaper cartoons. You've got an analogy, but actually that. The story behind all the stuff we do is some journalist who's done a lot of hard work and worked out what's going on, and we just parody what they say. But this, on a film, you're given the chance to actually put these people in the film and give it a bit of credibility, I think. That was the idea. So we interviewed these people, gave them a same set of subjects, really, about how we got to this point in history where there's so much disequilibrium on the planet, and just really selectively, the way you do, found bits of that they were saying that fitted the storyline. But the other thing about experts, you know, is that they do give credibility to an idea. When you draw, for instance, we draw finally the IMF and the World Bank as these huge, you know, steel boots with spikes on them dropping down on the third world territory, so they're never gonna get on the top deck if we have anything to do with it. But that sort of, some people say, oh yeah, that's silly, but you know, he can say that if you like. But then if you follow it with Arundhati Roy describing what happens in her country, that's a real person, and you've got to believe something she says. I know she's that's a different, it puts you in a different territory to an ordinary cartoon where you've got to say, oh, is this right or wrong? But if you've got someone describing what this boot represents while you're doing it, it seemed to me that was a very useful way to reinforce some of the outrageous kind of symbolism we are presenting.
Absolutely. I guess the sort of converse side of that question is a very serious subject matter, obviously, and quite an impressive array of expert talking heads. So what do you feel the animation and the satirical approach brings to the film that doing a sort of a straight, fact-based documentary could have done?
Yeah, well, see, I think here you just depend on a cinema audience who by now, after seeing so many, they don't only see cinema, they see video clips, they see ads, which are so demanding, you know, they ask you to follow these cuts and jumps and time shifts without any indication what's going on. We work them out. I think we've now got a cinema language. I think I'm just guessing that we've got a cinema language which is way ahead of, well, you know, we used to explain, you know, 3 days later we'd write on the screen, you know, and then know where you are. Now we just, you got to work it out. A director will give you a clue, and I think we do that. So I'm assuming that people, when we jump from the satire to the real stuff, to the metaphor, back to the committee, that they will remember who the committee was and what to expect from them and who the, you know, what the drawing is. I mean, it's hugely, if it works at all, it suggests that we're now pretty articulate with cinema.
Absolutely.
To me. Yeah. And we do these, whether it's a plus or whether we're just kidding ourselves, you know, we're getting impressions of what's going on. I don't know the theory of satire, and I know there's an awful lot of satire, and it could well become just another kind of therapy, you know. All right, things are appalling, there's no solution, but it's funny, at least we've got a sense of humour. What's supposed to happen is you say, all right, that's wrong. Monbiot's pointed out what's wrong. We change it. How do you change the World Bank? You know, an ordinary person. Who do we vote in that might change it? What do we write? What book do we write about? Well, my hope is, I suppose, that young people have an even more, make those connections really clearly in their heads, and they know how to do it.
Sure.
I don't know how they're going to do it, but those people in Cairo and Lebanon, and obviously people in our own universities, know this stuff, because it's not nothing we did in the film is, you know, hidden. What's hidden is the only hidden bit is the how the IMF works, and the World Bank, and not only them, but the other thing I think we forget is that, as well as some, you know, we invent the car and then we invent the transistor and then we get fuel injection and then we get, you know, DVDs and analog to whatever, digital. While that's going on, these economic finance experts are doing the same with money. It's getting a new, you know, once they put the rules up, then you invent a new way to get around the rules to go faster and quicker and more elusive and less coming up on the audits. And the auditors play the game too. You know, they're inventing ways to, it seems to me, that's what you would do if you were competitive and you're working against the rest of the world in the marketplace. That's what you'd do. Now, these never get, well, they probably do get some treatment in thick books from universities, but we don't, it's not currency. So I think that film hints at these pieces of apparatus that are going on behind the scenes. Arundhati Roy calls it, she says at the start, something like, if we want to look behind the curtain of blood, she says, we would see these pitiless transactions going on behind. That's what she calls it. I mean, that's her way of saying what I just said, I think.
Sure. The I guess the conclusion of the film is reasonably bleak, that this sort of state of global haywire is virtually almost irredeemable. I think the conclusion that the panel draws, or no, the Vince draws, is that, you know, you need to pack everything up and start again.
Yeah.
Is that, that reflects your personal opinion? Do you think things are that bad in the world?
Well, I think it reflects one view. The other view is that this is as good as it gets. That's the Maggie Thatcher thing, you know. We've tried everything, and this is enough of that welfare stuff, you know, it doesn't work. We just got to go with better, more regulated, well, less regulated marketplaces, though, and we'll have to do it. He says that, he does say that. He says, we made him say, God knows how long it took me to think of what to put in that balloon over his head. He says, reverse engineering, we'll have to start again, he says at the end of the film. After all, you know, since the Renaissance, since the Enlightenment, since we better start again. I think some people think that as crazy as that, but then people laugh. The rest of the committee laugh. the Indian guy says, we've just boomed, we're not going to start again. So I sort of had it a bit both ways there, and then it all went reflective. What do you do when, where's genius, you know, when you need it, on a whole lot of lines at the end of the film. But the plus side is just those students that we saw, I reckon, and the students here and students everywhere that, I mean, there have been changes that we, in my lifetime, would never have suspected. You just hope that as well as technological changes, there might be organisational changes to match. We'll go technology on that ramp forever and go fast and quick and that, but is organisation such a different proposition as to some of the brilliant technology? Is it a different part of the head? I mean, we just wired not to want to share the planet, or we not ever get to a point where we're worried enough to say, look, stop this, we've got to do it different. I mean, I hope kids at university will read the books they read, whatever they are, and see the films they see and the novels they read, and say what we're doing now is just not valid, it's not fair, and it's absurd and contradictory. We've got to do something, and instead of just bashing through the barricades at G8s, which is one thing that's happening, and get put into prison for a couple of nights. Learn how to do it. Learn how to reshape things that George Monbiot talks about, world banks and mechanisms for market mechanisms. Anyway, I suppose I'm talking about re-regulation, or regulation in a way that actually works. So I must say, I don't know the answer. And actually, cartoonists never have to answer that question. We just say, this is absurd.
Yeah, right.
I'm going home now.
Sure. I wanted to talk about that a little bit, actually, just to move away from the film a little bit, for a moment anyway. Political cartooning plays, I guess, a very distinctive kind of role in the broader media. I was wondering if you could talk about what you see that role as being, the role of cartoons, particularly for a fairly reactionary newspaper like The Age.
Yeah. Well, look, I think it's largely a tradition. You know, there's always been, you know, since Gilray, you know, 1700s, 1600s, there's always been satire. I mean, even before that, I think, and the theory was that, you know, satirists look at the events of the day and find contradictions and anomalies and point them out and point to the people who they think are responsible. So the obvious thing is autocrats and military insanity and obsessive leaders, and you used to point them out, and then they're supposed to be voted out next time. I mean, that's the mechanism, I suppose. But originally satire was kings, you know, king having a jester. And he's still going to do what he's going to do, but he's got a funny man there. And I think we're a bit doing that at the moment, you know. The Age is going to do what it does, the corporate world all around here, you know, the skyscrapers are going to do what they do, but it's quite nice to have a joke about us, because they're not going to change us now. It's a little bit of, you know, frustration, negative about, if you really think cartoons change things. On the other hand, it's still some people respond to them differently, and it generates a debate, which is good. It generates a bit of doubt in readers' minds as to whether what we're doing is actually, you know, has got a, it's in the global interest now, not just our interest. I think that if you could do that, that would be a start, but that's a, it's a very low expectation. But, you know, I alternate when I think about it, when you ask me, I can't really say satire is a great force for reform. I know some people are going to, maybe the next generation are going to do it better and be more ruthless and brutal and get into court and get into litigation, which we don't do. You know, once we get into area which I think we should get into, like corporate behaviour, we got to be careful because it's going to cost, they're going to sue the agent and that'll cost $150,000. You know, out of court settlement, so no, don't want to do that, and you wouldn't achieve much anyway if it went in the paper. So it's a bit frustrating, but satire, I don't know, it maybe it just keeps your mind hugely elastic and ready to do something, so that we don't panic when, because things are going to change anyway for everybody. So I think satire says, well, get ready. You know, that'd be one thing it does.
So would you say, if you wanted to sum up your primary aim with Global Haywire, would you say that's it, to ready people's minds for action using the satirical approach?
I hadn't thought about it like that, but if that's what I said, maybe that's what I think. Yeah, that's a pretty low target, I must say. But yeah, I think jokes generally, and rap and music does it too. You know, novels. In fact, all art forms do that. They sort of ready you a bit for whatever's going to happen next, so that it doesn't come as a complete surprise. You know, when doesn't come as a complete surprise when some country, we find some country doesn't like us and jacks up on trade or starts objecting in a global way, and we aren't particularly liked as a nation in a lot of countries. We liked well enough as people, but. You know, so that could, yeah, I think you could say satire is part of the voices in the community that say anything can happen, you know, start thinking of alternatives.